Speech War Document 40. Enforcement of Law Against Corporations. From an address delivered in Keokuk, Iowa, October 1, 1907. Men and women of Iowa, I am glad indeed to see you and to speak to you in this thriving city of your great and prosperous state. I believe with all my heart in the people of Iowa, for I think that you are good, typical Americans, and that among you there has been developed to a very high degree that body of characteristics which we like to regard as distinctly American. During the last few years we of the United States have been forced to consider very seriously certain economic problems. We have made a beginning in the attempt to deal with the relations of the national government, that is, with the relations of the people of the country, to the huge and wealthy corporations, controlled for the most part by a few very rich men, which are engaged in interstate business, especially the great railway corporations. You know my views in this matter. You know that I believe that the national government, in the interests of the people, should assume much the same supervision and control over the management of the interstate common carriers that it now exercises over the national banks. You know furthermore that I believe that this supervision and control should be exercised in a spirit of rigid fairness toward the corporations, exacting justice from them in behalf of the people but giving them justice in return. Recently I have been reading the work of the eminent Italian scholar Ferrero in the history of the Roman Republic, when the life of the Roman state had become that of a complex and luxurious industrial civilization. I am happy to say that the differences between that civilization and our own are more striking than the resemblances, and there is no warrant for our being drawn into any pessimistic comparison between the two civilizations. But there is every reason why we should study carefully the past in order to draw from it lessons for use in the present. One of the most striking features of the years which saw the downfall of the Roman Republic was the fact that the political life of Rome became split between two camps, one containing the rich who wished to exploit the poor, and the other the poor who wished to plunder the rich. Naturally, under such circumstances, the public man who was for the moment successful tended to be either a violent reactionary or a violent demagogue. Any such condition of political life is as hopelessly unhealthy now as it was then. I believe so implicitly in the future of our people, because I believe that the average American citizen will no more tolerate government by a mob than he will tolerate government by a plutocracy, that he desires to see justice done to and justice exacted from rich man and poor man alike. We are not trying to favor any man at the expense of his fellows. We are trying to shape things so that as far as possible each man shall have a fair chance in life, so that he shall have, so far as by law this can be accomplished, the chance to show the stuff that there is in him. We have no intention of trying to work for the impossible and undesirable end of giving to the lazy, the thriftless, the weak and the vicious the reward that belongs to, and in the long run can only come to, the hard-working, the thrifty, the resolute and the honest. But we do wish to see that the necessary struggle in life shall be carried in under genuinely democratic conditions, that, so far as human action can safely provide it, there shall be an approximately fair start, that there shall be no oppression of the weak, and that no man shall be permitted to acquire or to use a vast fortune by methods or in ways that are tortuous and dishonest. Therefore we need wise laws, and we need to have them resolutely administered. We can get such laws and such administration only if the people are alive to their interests. The other day I listened to an admirable sermon by Bishop Johnston of Western Texas. His theme was that the vital element in judging any man should be his conduct, and neither his position nor his pretensions, and, furthermore, that freedom could only stay with a people which has the habit of self-mastery. As he said, the price of liberty is not only eternal vigilance, but eternal virtue, and, I may add, eternal common sense. Each man here knows that he himself has been able to use his freedom to advantage only, provided that he could master himself, that he could control his own passions and direct his own faculties. Each of you fathers and mothers here knows that, if your sons are to do well in the world they must know how to master themselves. Every man must have a master, If he is not his own master, then somebody else will be. This is just as true of public life as of private life. If we cannot master ourselves, control ourselves, then sooner or later we shall have to submit to outside control, for there must be control somewhere. One way of exercising such control is through the laws of the land. Ours is a government of liberty, but it is a government of that orderly liberty which comes by and through the honest enforcement of and obedience to the law. At intervals during the last few months the appeal has been made to me not to enforce the law against certain wrongdoers of great wealth, because to do so would interfere with the business prosperity of the country. Under the effects of that kind of fright which when sufficiently acute we call panic, this appeal has been made to me even by men who ordinarily behave as decent citizens. One newspaper which has itself strongly advanced this view gave prominence to the statement of a certain man of great wealth to the effect that the so-called financial weakness was due entirely to the admitted intention of President Roosevelt to punish the large moneyed interests which had transgressed the laws. I do not admit that this has been the main cause of any business troubles we have had, but it is possible that it has been a contributory cause. If so, friends, as far as I am concerned, it must be accepted as a disagreeable but unavoidable feature in a course of policy which, as long as I am president, will not be changed. In any great movement for righteousness, where the forces of evil are strongly entrenched, it is unfortunately inevitable that some unoffending people should suffer in company with the real offenders. This is not our fault. It is the fault of those to whose deceptive action these innocent people owe their false position. A year or two ago certain representatives of labor called upon me and in the course of a very pleasant conversation told me that they regarded me as the friend of labor. I answered that I certainly was, and that I would do everything in my power for the laboring man, except anything that was wrong. I have the same answer to make to the businessman. I will do everything I can do to help business conditions, except anything that is wrong. And it would be not merely wrong but infamous to fail to do all that can be done to secure the punishment of those wrongdoers whose deeds are peculiarly reprehensible, because they are not committed under the stress of want. Whenever a serious effort is made to cut out what is evil in our political life, whether the effort takes the shape of warring against the gross and sordid forms of evil in some municipality, or whether it takes the shape of trying to secure the honest enforcement of the law as against very powerful and wealthy people, there are sure to be certain individuals who demand that the movement stop, because it may hurt business. In each case the answer must be that we earnestly hope and believe that there will be no permanent damage to business from the movement, but that, if righteousness conflicts with the fancied needs of business, then the latter must go to the wall. We cannot afford to substitute any other test for that of guilt or innocence, of wrongdoing or well-doing, in judging any man. If a man does well, if he acts honestly, he has nothing to fear from this administration. But so far, as in me lies the corrupt politician, great or small, the private citizen who transgresses the law, be he rich or poor, shall be brought before the impartial justice of a court. Perhaps I am most anxious to get at the politician who is corrupt, because he betrays a great trust, but assuredly I shall not spare his brother corruptionist who shows himself a swindler in business life, and, according to our power, crimes of fraud and cunning shall be prosecuted as relentlessly as crimes of brutality and physical violence. We need good laws and we need, above all things, the hearty aid of good citizens in supporting and enforcing the laws. Nevertheless, men and women of this great state, men and women of the Middle West, never forget that law and the administration of law, important though they are, must always occupy a wholly secondary place, as compared with the character of the average citizen himself. Point. Point. Point.